This is Friday, August 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up today, the story of the robbery of American swimmers in Rio that most likely was not a robbery takes some major turns. We'll check in with Park Brewer in Rio de Janeiro. U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump's team undergoes another shakeup and an admission from the candidate. We'll talk with VOA's Catherine Gibson about that, and International Edition Steve Miller will stop by with an update on the situation in the South China Sea.
How the United States and its allies will react to that, that's really the next key in this whole struggle for probably the next decade or so.
It is all on today's International Edition, but we start with the Olympics, and not so much with all of the athletics that is taking part, although we'll touch on that. U.S. Olympic swimmer Ryan Lochte apologized for his behavior surrounding an early morning incident at a Rio de Janeiro gas station, saying he should have been more careful and candid about how he described what had happened. Lochte said in a lengthy post on Instagram today that he was apologizing for his role and taking the focus away from other Olympic athletes. VOA's Park Brewer is in Rio covering the Olympics. Park, what's the latest on this?
Well, the latest is, Ira, the USOC had to make a formal apology as well to the Brazilian authorities. And, of course, they are highly embarrassed by this entire incident. For those who have been following the story, it's now in its sixth day because it was early in the hours of Sunday morning, probably around 6 or 6:30, when these four swimmers from the U.S. Olympic team, after their final night of competition, were leaving the hospitality house run by the French. And the original story was they were robbed in a taxi cab by a couple police people disguised as policemen or policemen. And at the time, Lochte had said a gun was held to his head. Completely false, completely fabricated. They had stopped at a filling station where their taxi needed gas, and they wanted to use the restroom there. And what actually happened is they vandalized the door, the mirror in the bathroom, and even, I think, a soap dish holder. And what happened is the two security guards at the gas station had them all sit out on the curb, and they did pull guns out, but apparently they didn't point them at them. They just, you know, wanted demand of payment for what they had done to vandalize these bathrooms. And apparently the swimmers gave them the equivalent of about 50 U.S. dollars. They went on their way, but, you know, so in essence, the swimmers really lied about this entire incident. And, you know, in this day and age, Ira, there are cameras everywhere, video cameras. How can anybody think that they're not going to be seen and not be caught, you know, fabricating a story like this? Now, again, they probably were a little bit intoxicated. They'd been partying all night after their last swim event, but this certainly, again, as I said, it's highly embarrassing to the U.S. Olympic Committee. Lochte was already back in the United States. He was one that claimed he had the gun pointed to his head. He was back in the States on Monday. Finally, two others left to jeers and just cry, shouts of liars, cheats, as Jimmy Fagan and Gunnar Bentz headed out of Rio. So not a good story at all. Apparently, Jimmy Fagan is going to donate $11,000 to a charity in Brazil, which would have been the cost to help cover the damage done at this Shell gas station.
A lot of damage. What is it? What is the damage to the overall feeling of those at the Olympics toward the American Olympic team?
Well, I think it's not a good feeling at all. I mean, you know, there have been past situations where Olympians have done things into their rooms at the villages and things like that, but just outright lying in a city that, you know, sometimes is on the edge for security and is notorious for some of the crime that takes place here, to have a swimmer say a gun was pointed to his head and get everybody in fear after that happened, and it never really happened, it does not sit well with the people here, no doubt about it.
Well, the games continue. What are the highlights so far today?
Well, the highlights today are going to be a Jamaican Usain Bolt. He's going again for his third consecutive gold medal in the men's 4x100-meter relay. I was at the stadium last night when he won the 200. It's just electrifying when you hear the crowds get behind him. He's such a showman, and to think what he's done is quite amazing, Ira. You know, three consecutive Olympics gold in the 100 and 200, and now again trying for the gold in the 4x100-meter relay. The Jamaicans are the favorite. Of course, the U.S. expected to give them a challenge. But this is going to be another electrifying night out at the Athletics Stadium, no doubt about it.
VOA's Park Brewer in Rio covering the Olympics for us. Thanks again, Park.
My pleasure, Ira.
All right. I would imagine, G. Lee is with us. She checks our social media on a daily basis. And I would think that this was trending pretty well as far as social media is concerned.
Well is another word to describe it. Yes, it was trending. And the majority of the commenters on social media are criticizing his behavior last weekend. But more importantly, how he wasn't upfront about how the event unfolded. And those who visited Rio said they feel bad for the impression he gave the world about the people of Brazil, because it was clear to them that the Brazilian people went to the extreme to ensure the athletes felt safe.
All right, that's going to continue trending. I'm sure of that. Yesterday, we talked about a toy, or at least a device, that went with a McDonald's Happy Meal. That's changed, hasn't it?
Within a very short period of time, yes. The fast food chain removed the Step It fitness trackers from its Happy Meal offers after reports of skin irritations. And although some people still say it's such an ironic gift for McDonald's anyways, a lot of people are saying that it's the kind of skin rash is quite common for people who use those fitness tracker devices, because if you think about it, anything you wear on your skin can cause rash if you don't keep it clean or wear it while you're sweating.
At least if you're the parent of a three-year-old, why would you put a tracker on the three-year-old anyway?
That's so true.
See, I don't know. I don't get it. There is something else, something about Gatorade.
That's true. It's actually about Usain Bolt. An animation clip sponsored by Gatorade is making the rounds on the web, and it's featuring the Jamaican sprinter depicting his childhood and his success. And in the clip, there's a part where Bolt and his mother are having a heart-to-heart. And when his mom saw that the pressure to win is wearing him down, she told him, "You can always go fast if you keep it light." And with that, I'm going to keep it light and enjoy my weekend, and I'll see you next week.
Have a wonderful weekend. Remember, you can tweet us your comments and your questions at VOA_IE. You can also find G. Abby Lee at G. Abby Lee. That makes sense. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk American politics. Catherine Gibson from VOA, who's been following it, is with us. Just stay with us. Hold on here on International Edition. Among the top stories we're covering, another shakeup in the Donald Trump campaign with the resignation of his campaign chairman. American swimmer Ryan Lochte has apologized for his behavior in a robbery scandal at the Rio Olympics. Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi meets with Chinese President Xi Jinping to discuss the future of relations between those two countries. And expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Ever wonder just how big is the universe? In 2005, scientists using data from a NASA microwave probe calculated the radius of the observable universe with Earth as its center to be 45.66 billion light years. Since then, this calculation has been considered to be the standard throughout the astrophysics community. But now, Paul Halpern and Nick Tomasello of the University of the Sciences have made some new calculations. They find the radius is actually a little bit smaller, at 45.34 billion light years. That's not the entire universe, though. That's the observable universe based on the farthest light to reach Earth, which is 13.8 billion light years away. And in all the time it took that light to reach us, the universe kept right on expanding to its present calculated radius of 45.34 billion light years. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Donald Trump and his running mate Mike Pence are in Louisiana today surveying the flood damage that killed at least 13 people and displaced thousands more. This visit comes amid an ongoing staff shakeup. Trump's campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, resigned today following revelations about his work for a pro-Russian political party in Ukraine. In a statement, Trump praised Manafort's work on the campaign, called him a true professional. VOA's Catherine Gibson joins us in studio. We'll talk with her in just a second. But also, Trump yesterday made some comments we haven't heard from him before.
Sometimes in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. And believe it or not, I regret it.
So, Catherine Gibson, what surprises you more, those comments yesterday or Manafort going away today?
Oh, absolutely. The comments yesterday.
Sure, yeah.
Trump expressing regret. That's something that you don't hear a whole lot. Actually, I don't know if we've ever really heard it with that kind of force and actual sincerity, to be honest with you.
Well, where does it go from here? Where does that come from? Does that come from some of the changes, do you think, that he made in his campaign staff?
I really have a feeling that comes from Kellyanne Conway, who is one of the new campaign staffers who came in this week in that campaign shakeup. Looking and seeing her talk, she really has this much more measured approach than the other Trump campaign staffers. And I think this might be coming from her, an attempt to turn around those polling numbers. She's a pollster. She knows what needs to happen next.
Well, people who have been following this story, and it is worldwide, people following the story, as you well know, are saying, is this going to stay? Is he going to continue doing this, Donald Trump, or he seems to really enjoy speaking off the cuff, and that's what seems to have gotten him in trouble in the recent past?
Well, I mean, we all know that Trump is always going to be Trump to some extent. You're never going to be fully able to rein him in. And of course, that's the appeal for his supporters, is that he says what he thinks and he doesn't apologize to the news media or the establishment for it. So I think we will definitely see a lot more of these cycles where we hear controversial comments and then the back and forth about what they really meant.
And how is the Hillary Clinton campaign handling all this?
They have been quite quiet the past few days.
Yeah,
they are stepping back and they're letting, you know, the upheaval over on the Trump side speak for itself.
Yeah. And what's happening as far as Clinton is concerned? Anything new, or is it just the usual stuff about emails and things like that?
There have also been some questions about the foundation, about what would happen with the Clinton Foundation if and when Hillary Clinton was elected president, how they would handle those donations, if the foundation would have to actually shut down. So that's the little drama over in Clinton world, but it's certainly overshadowed by what's been happening over on the Trump side.
Has this or has this not been the most interesting political campaign you've ever covered?
Oh, it's been fantastic. It's been exhausting and fantastic and interesting in ways that I couldn't have even imagined, in the questions that it raises about where America is going as a society.
VOA's Catherine Gibson with us after covering both conventions and trying to get a handle on this election story, which changes by the minute, seemingly. Catherine, thanks for being with us.
You're so welcome.
This is VOA. Since the permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague ruled against China and its territorial claims to the majority of the South China Sea, Beijing has not altered its approach to the region. We get the story from VOA Steve Miller.
Chinese Defense Minister Chang Wanquan says the Chinese military, police, and people should prepare for mobilization to defend national sovereignty and territorial integrity. With Manila, Japan, the United States, and other members of the international community urging China to honor the court's ruling, what exactly is Beijing trying to achieve with its latest actions?
I think what they're trying to achieve is basically just to show their anger with the recent ruling that was in the Court of Arbitration in The Hague.
That's Harry Kazianis, Senior Fellow for Defense Policy at the Center for the National Interest.
And I think we have to break this down in terms of two sets of reactions. The first set of reactions is basically from what's happened from July and basically what's going to happen until early September.
Because that's when China is going to host the G20 summit. Kazianis says Beijing will continue pushing ahead using its current tactics to gradually change the status quo.
But they're not going to do anything that's highly escalatory or risky until after September.
China has telegraphed some possible actions, like land reclamation work on the Scarborough Shoal or declaring a South China Sea air defense identification zone. Greg Pulling, director of the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, identifies 2014 as the year that China changed the way it was putting forward its claims. He says it was widely known that Beijing was bullying and coercing its neighbors, like Vietnam and the Philippines. But
in 2014, all of a sudden, we had Chinese artificial islands cropping up in the middle of the ocean, where previously there had only been submerged reefs. And that changed the balance of power in a really fundamental way.
Because China can now deploy military or law enforcement in numbers never seen before that far south.
Which, if it's not stopped, is going to allow Beijing to just saturate this area. And if the goal is to establish effective control in peacetime, it's just hard to see how the Vietnamese and the Filipinos and the Malaysians can continue to operate in any real way in the Nine-Dash Line without China's forbearance.
Kazianis says rising powers have always challenged the established status quo.
So what happens next is really a history problem above all else. And how the United States and its allies will react to that, that's really the next key in this whole struggle for probably the next decade or so.
So what can be done to enforce the Hague ruling and prevent militarization of China's new outposts? Greg Pulling again.
Ultimately, we have limited options. If China is absolutely committed to this strategy, no matter the diplomatic costs, then it's hard to see what the international community or those most involved like the U.S. or Japan can do. And that's an unsatisfactory answer if you're looking for how do we resolve the South China Sea tomorrow or next month or next year. But if you recognize that ultimately this is a 5 or 10 year contest of wills, then it's the only tool you have.
Steve Miller, VOA News, Washington.
You can hear more of Steve's report. Go to our website, voanews.com. Click on the red tab and look under our broadcast programs for VOA Asia Weekly. This is VOA.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
We check the financial markets. Money news on International Edition. We head live to New York City and our financial expert, Joe Malandrino. What's going on today, Joe?
Well, we've seen a little bit of pullback in the markets this week as we shift away from earnings and news in general. Usually the last 2 weeks in August, you kind of fall into that earnings and news vacuum. Right now, we're again focused on the Federal Reserve and timing of interest rate hikes potentially in September. And we're also going to focus on that next week as well when we have the Jackson Hole Conference in Wyoming. Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen is expected to speak. So traders and analysts are really going to pick apart what she has to say there to see if we get any clues into the market. I would pay attention to the financial sector and, of course, what happens with the U.S. dollar. Those will be the two things most widely impacted.
As Jill lobbies to go to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, we'll talk to you again next week. Okay, Jill?
Thank you very much.
This is International Edition on VOA. Singer Leanne Rimes has been in the music business since she was only 11 years old. The multiple Grammy winner has a new song and a new album out that she says allows her to finally sing from her heart and her soul. International Edition's David Byrd gives a listen.
All of these lines across my face tell you the story of who I am.
Leanne Rimes has been in the music business since she was only 11. She won 2 Grammy Awards for her song Blue and as the Best New Artist in 1997. But now Rimes is signed with a new record company and is about to release her 16th studio album. She says that fans can look forward to hearing more of the real Leanne Rimes.
And I'm from Mississippi originally, and I moved from there when I was really young, but I didn't realize how much of, like, the, you know, gospel part of the South, the rock and soul of it all was in my blood. And that just seemed to be what naturally came out for me on this record.
The first song from the new album, The Story, is a ballad about love and heartbreak. But Leanne says that the whole record is not just about love and loss.
It's a very epic record in terms of sound. We have this fantastic background singers all over the record, and it's very soulful. So I think this story just gives a hint into a newer sound for me. But when you hear the record, it's like it's completely different.
Leanne says she always knew this type of record was in her heart, but she was obligated to produce a certain kind of album because of her former contract. But now Leanne says that she thinks fans will like what they hear.
It's pretty powerful to make that, you know, from to make music from your soul is like making you make it from a completely different place. And I have done that before as a songwriter, but never, I think, with the sound of the record truly being like something that came out of me.
The 33-year-old singer says there have been times in her career that she thought of leaving it all behind. But Leanne credits her longtime collaborator and friend, Daryl Brown, with getting her through the tough times. Leanne Rimes says she is in a good place and looks forward to the new album. The Story is out now as a single. The album is set for release later this year. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that is going to wrap up our program for today. We thank you so much for being with us on International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us, if you want, at Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director, Patrice Martin, thank you. Engineer Pete Hunley, thank you. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Senior officials from the U.S. Embassy in Vientiane and U.S. Pacific Command, or USPACOM, met in Honolulu with senior officials from the Lao Ministry of National Defense for the 11th Lao-United States Bilateral Defense Dialogue. Brigadier General Khin Chan Nantalasi, Director of Foreign Relations Department, Ministry of National Defense, and Brigadier General Mark Gillette, Deputy Director of USPACOM Directorate for Strategic Plans and Policy, led the meeting. Over 30 Lao and U.S. delegates participated in the event, including representatives from the Lao Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Defense Security Cooperation Agency in Washington, D.C. Ambassador Daniel Clune noted in his opening remarks the significant expansion of bilateral military cooperation in recent years and the positive impact it is having on the overall U.S.-Lao relationship. The Bilateral Defense Dialogue is a forum for bilateral consultations between the Lao Ministry of National Defense and U.S. Pacific Command to strengthen bilateral and multilateral cooperation, as well as develop defense cooperation programs that enhance relations between our security forces, encourage greater regional military cooperation, and promote the common interests of both countries. Primary topics of the dialogue included military-medical cooperation, civil-military operations to include cooperation on humanitarian unexploded ordnance removal and disaster relief, training and education opportunities to include English language training and professional military education, and Lao People's Army participation in regional conferences, workshops, and senior-level meetings. The United States is proud to work with its partner Laos for the benefit of both nations and the Asia-Pacific region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Way. Hey.